Blog Talk Radio.
This is for you, Kings fans, wherever you may be. All the frustration and disappointment of the past is gone.
Good evening, everyone. It is 8.01 p.m. on November 29th, and we are back on the JewelCast for the first time in about a month and a half. Today, I am joined by Robin, who is now unmuted. Robin, you there?
I'm here.
Hey,
can you hear me?
All right. Yeah, definitely. So we are rolling. The season so far has been up and down in every possible sense. We're currently on a 5-game winning streak after a losing streak, then a winning streak, then a losing streak, then a winning streak, then a losing streak, then a winning streak, if I have that right. So we've got a lot to catch up on, I think. How's everything going for you, Robin?
Pretty good. I mean, we do call them the Cardiac Kings, so they're nothing if not streaky, always.
Yep. And thankfully, they've managed to start winning in regulation lately, which is kind of nice. Although, given that they were playing the Blackhawks, I think they had to go ahead and wait until overtime for that one.
I feel like we should have won that one 3-1, but, you know, controversy is, you know, never. It always, whenever the Kings and Blackhawks play, somebody has to have their feelings hurt, so.
So you went to that game. Was that your first game of the season?
Yes. Hard to get to them when I lived 300 miles away.
Yeah, it's a bit of a trek. I guess starting with that game, because we got Marian Gaborik back for that one for the first time first time all season. Andrei Kopitar was in the lineup. There was a fancy new monument out front, so it was kind of an exciting day. What did you think of the monument, given that they unveiled it in the least dramatic way possible?
Well, they canceled it due to inclement weather, but the funny thing is, when I got there, it was clear skies, it was a little cold, there was no wind, but it was absolutely beautiful outside, so I guess you have to prepare for the worst. But, I mean, the monument itself isn't bad. It's separated far and away from all the other monuments, and I think there's like a waterfall feature with it, which confuses me, but I'm like, okay.
Nifty. I think, it reminded me, you know those Animorphs books? I used to read them when I was a kid. The whole cover of everyone was morphing from a kid into an animal, and that was kind of the vibe I got, which is, for me, a positive one because I love Animorphs, but it was an interesting design choice, to say the least.
Well, let's just say that I don't really agree with 90% of their design choices. So the monument is probably like the least of their ugly recent design choices.
I don't know. I don't know. The 50th jersey is growing on me a little bit. It's growing on me a little bit.
I hate it so much. It's like they took their stupid Stadium Series jersey and was like, okay, we're going to modify this patch and we're going to outline it in gold. There you go.
Mm-hmm.
For like the purple and gold.
Yeah. And I think we've finally passed the point of no return where everybody's realizing they're never going to go back to that as a primary. But If they're not going to, at least, I guess, own your choices, and they've done that.
Yes, with the most boring colors on the face of the earth, which black and gray aren't even really colors. So.
Yeah, it's the absence of color or the saturation. I don't know, but at least it's kind of unique in that it's more the only team without that kind of color in their main jersey. And Vegas decided they didn't want to go pure silver either, so that was nice of them.
Yeah, they didn't completely steal our look, just half of it.
That's all it takes. And as for the game, Kings came out flying. I mean, what did you think seeing them in person for the first time? What was your reaction to how they played?
It was interesting because they really owned the first two periods, and the controversial waved off goal I thought really should have been a goal because Jonathan milked it. Like, it was a slow slide on the ice. I'm like, come on, buddy. Like, you're a professional hockey player. Get up. And then, like, Darling didn't even have a chance. So it was like, okay, Jonathan interfering with Darling, regardless, he was never going to stop that. But otherwise, aside from, like, a crappy third period, they were actually surprisingly good. And I was like, okay, they've been a lot more consistent over these last five games, which is kind of not the Kings.
Right, right. And given the way they've played this season, I mean, I think Daryl Sutter was quoted as saying recently that aside from one bad period in Ottawa, which was that third period, he's been pretty satisfied with the Kings, even through the tail end of the road trip. And clearly he's been comfortable with the way they've been playing, given that he hadn't made a whole lot of line changes, even when the Kings were going through a losing streak. But there was still a lot of dissatisfaction with the way they were playing before they started this current run.
Yeah, I felt like, once they got shut out 3-0, those three times in a row, then they came back for their winning streak, and then they had that other losing streak. For the most part, through their losing streak, it felt like it was January and February again, where the offense just suddenly dies. But otherwise, I didn't think they were playing that poorly in that last three-game losing streak. It was, aside from that one terrible period in Ottawa where they forgot how to play hockey.
Right, and they did have to go into Montreal, so we'll give them a little bit of a break on that one, given that Montreal is the greatest team in the history of the universe at home right now. But losing to the Jets and the Avalanche back-to-back, though, I remember on the first podcast of the year, I was looking at the schedule and thinking November was the time that if they had a bit of a rough start, that's when they'd make up ground. And they went up to Canada and to Colorado and lost four in a row, and it was starting to look like they'd missed their chance. But then they came home.
I guess all it took was coming home. But they had kind of a weird schedule in November because of this stupid World Cup of Hockey pushing everything back. So they played, I think, like 7 games in 10 days. I was like, are they ever going to take a break? And then the week, Thanksgiving week, finally, they got a little break.
Yeah. Yeah, and it was, 2 days off, 2 days off, and then 3 before tomorrow. So even though they kind of get right back into it with a bunch of games in December, they've got a 9-game road trip, which is in 16 days. So that's going to be tough. But, I mean, it seems like they'll be able to build a little bit of a cushion, at least if they keep playing the way they've been playing, which they're really going to need in December.
Yeah, definitely. And their 9-game road trip is by far the longest road trip that they have had in probably, four seasons, because I think they usually cap out around 6 or 7 for their Grammys road trip. I was going over their February schedule, and I was going, wait, how are they home so often in February? Weird quirk in the schedule this year.
Yeah, and they got like the end of January all on the road, but then they had to play the All-Star game, so I guess they figure, well, we're going to have to set up a rink at some point in that tail end. So they only have, 5 games at or on the road, and then they got four games on the road with a little bit of a break in between. So they should, you would think, be able to avoid that usual January skid, but we might know better than that now.
I don't know. I think it was last year. I think I wrote about it. Last year, it was like up until March, they were playing super well, and then all of a sudden, March came along, and it looked like January, and I was like, wait, what? No, this is not how it's supposed
right.
to work, King. No, you're supposed to go through this test
so.
In January.
Yeah, well, I mean, if they do it in January, they're still probably not going to have Quick back. But I mean, Peter Budaj, I've been wanting to talk about him for a while, so let's do it now. You watched him in Ontario fairly often last year, and he was great in Ontario. But was there any sign that he might be able to handle this workload in the NHL?
I know that that's a good question, because I've been wondering that quite a bit myself, and unfortunately I never did get a chance to ask him, but I was just curious in my mind. I was thinking, I wonder for a goalie what the difference between NHL and AHL is in terms of, you know, workload and then facing skilled shooters. Obviously, if you're in the NHL, your shots are far more accurate. The play is just a touch faster than the AHL, which is why certain guys thrive down in the minor leagues but then suffer in the NHL. But I think primarily it does have a lot to do with the system, because I do think that the system protects Budaj a lot. Now, if it were a different team like Colorado, or if he were back with his old team in Montreal, I think he would be suffering a lot. But because Kings tend to give up more limited shots and chances against, and I'm not saying that he doesn't have to do work still, because he obviously does, and we've seen those games where he has stolen the show for them, but I think actually I think he started at one point 16 or 18 games in a row down in the minor leagues. I think that actually helped him, because he did a bunch of 3-3s. So with limited we don't have 3-3s in the NHL, but, you know, with a couple of back-to-backs and then you at least get a day of rest between, that's more than enough for a guy like Budaj, who just has to be conservative with his movements.
Yeah, and he's played now 20 games in a row. I think two of them in relief of Zatkoff. One of them, of course, Zatkoff got hurt. But it's I guess both of them actually. Zatkoff got hurt, so it's weird. More to the point that he's got a .917 save percentage right now. His career high save percentage is actually .917. He did that like 6 years ago. So that's kind of the amazing thing. And I know the system obviously helps him, but we've seen backups have rough seasons for the Kings, and we've seen even Quick have rough seasons for the Kings. So he certainly does deserve a lot of credit for how he's played.
Yeah, 100%. And I mean, not to take anything away from what Budaj is doing, definitely the system helps, but of course Budaj, it's all about like the basics for Budaj, just sticking to what he knows, not trying to be Quick, not trying to be any other goalie. And I think that's kind of the biggest key to his success so far. It's just do what he knows to do. If he's a little bit slower on the wraparounds, then so be it. Not every goalie is Henrik Lundqvist, where he can move from pipe to pipe in the blink of an
right.
eye. And that's fine. That's all the Kings need.
Yeah, definitely. And I wonder if, I mean, he was with the Canadiens through 2014, but he was getting a backups workload for 4 or 5 seasons before he got sent down to the AHL. And the season with the Rain last year was the first time he'd gotten more than half a season's worth of work in like 5 years. And you wonder if that was something that allowed him to sort of key in on getting a heavy workload and getting back to those fundamentals, like you said. It's an interesting theory that maybe I can't speak too much about because I don't have the familiarity with goalies, but it's something to consider.
Yeah, definitely. I don't know 100% either. I'm not super familiar, but I think being just an athlete in general and just kind of how Budaj plays based on what I've seen from him, just it is that athletic body shape. It is, you know, just getting that workload. I think the consistent workload at least so far has seems to have translated. Of course, I could be totally off, and anybody who knows goalie is probably screaming at their computer or whatever.
Of course. So when Zatkov does come back into the, I mean, he's been activated, of course. So we're going to get into December. The first back-to-back is on the 15th, and then there's a back-to-back the next week, and then the week after. Do you just give Zatkov the second half or the first half of each back-to-back, or do you stick with Budaj if he stays hot?
That's a good question. Mr. Game 1, Zatkov. He obviously played really well for the Penguins last year, enough that they trusted him to start in the Stanley Cup Final. I think Fleury was hurt or something, but I thought Matt Murray was backing up Zatkov. But, I mean, Zatkov is a good goalie. Obviously, we haven't really had a chance to see it. So,
yeah,
at some point, Budaj is going to need a rest, regardless of what he says. I don't care if he says that he can go, like, 50 games. You know, today's NHL is a little bit different than 50 years ago when I can't remember who set the record. Well, I know Rogie Vachon has one of the Kings' records of starting the most regular season games, stick talk to our buddy Shang.
I think, and I'd actually forgotten that tomorrow and Thursday are back-to-back too, so I wonder if we're going to see Zatkov. I think it would be a good idea to start him against the Coyotes on Thursday. They do have to travel a couple hundred miles to get there, and the Coyotes should be a, you know, if you're going to face any team trying to get back into form, then maybe that's the one you want to play. But Budaj started, or he's played 20 games in a row now, so who knows what Sutter will do.
This is Sutter. I don't know if you remember a couple of years ago, I think Quick started something like 12 or 14 games in a row, and the media started asking questions like, hey, you guys have a backup. Do you remember that? And he started complaining that somebody, I can't remember who, started some ridiculous 50 games in a row, never took, or no, he had like some record of playing every game for 3 years, 3 seasons in a row. And I was like, yeah, but sir, this is a little bit different. But,
yeah,
but
we're in a new era now.
So, yeah. It is better. We'll never know exactly what's going through his mind, but I do think that he will give Budaj a rest in the coming week. Will it be this week after having an extended time off? I mean, he had 2 days off for Thanksgiving. He played really well on Saturday. I mean, he was seeing the puck so well on Saturday. I was super impressed.
Yeah.
And then he got, you know, another couple days off. Now they're going to play back-to-back Wednesday, Thursday. So it's like, well, yeah, you could take him out of net, and you could try and give Zatkov a go and try and get him going a little bit, but I don't know. Unfortunately, with Sutter, that's all you can ever say.
Right. And he, I think in the past he's shown a tendency where if the goalie's on a winning streak or if he gets a shutout or plays really well, he's not even going to think about making a change even for a back-to-back. Granted, that's usually Quick we're talking about, but I think we'll see Zatkov if the Sharks do beat Budaj tomorrow, but otherwise it's probably Budai's net until something goes wrong for him.
Yeah, that sounds pretty reasonable. I mean, if you go back to Sutter's comments from last week after Zatkov came back from injury and he said he was ready to go, he was a little bit displeased with Zatkov's performance in a third game before he got hurt. And removed himself.
Yeah. Yeah, it's gonna. So, well, I guess he'll see what's going on in practice and evaluate whether he likes Zatkov better based on that. But it's gonna be a long road back for him.
Yeah, and it'll be an interesting matchup tomorrow night because the Sharks are having trouble scoring, but then the Sharks and Kings are always tight. So if they lose 2-1 or even win 2-1 against the Sharks, or maybe let's say 3-2. Do you pull Budaj against the Coyotes? I guess it really depends on how Budaj himself is playing.
Yeah, and the Sharks are playing right now against Arizona. I think they're actually down 1-0, but they're out shooting Arizona 24-8. So, which is sounds a lot like something we would try to do. So I think the. I hope that the Sharks are a little bit tired out and don't give the Kings the kind of game they usually give them.
We'll see. I mean, I feel like the Sharks always get up for the Kings. The Sharks this year, or at least the last 2 years since 2014, I feel like they remind me a little bit of the Coyotes in that not that they're bad or anything, but that they always get up for this rivalry game. And mm-hmm. L.A. has a tendency not to necessarily show up for these rivalry games. On the other hand, at least playing the Sharks, it's like, kept, like you're watching those games, it's that meme where you're nudging them with a stick, like, come on, do something.
Yeah. Yeah, and the Kings have, like, they've been really bad against the Ducks the last couple of years in the regular season, too. I think last year they lost, like, 4 out of 5 or something like that, but they didn't look good on... was it Sunday? It was Sunday.
They
look
horrible.
The Ducks.
Well, I take it back. They were actually pretty good. I was impressed by their second wave of defense. So were pretty good at clearing rebounds and keeping that second man back for extra attacks with the Ducks mm-hmm. pressing. But they took 7 penalties.
Yes, that is a good point. And the third period, that's going to happen. Like, the Ducks were down by 3. They were desperate. The Kings are going to fall back, and the Ducks are just going to get all the shots. But, yeah, 7 penalties. I'm looking up right now, but I'm 99% sure that's the most they've taken this year. And I don't think they've they did take 7 against Chicago in October, and that obviously ended really badly, too. But they had been showing a lot of discipline all throughout November. They took 5 penalties in one game and then 4 in 2 other games. But every other one, they were 1 penalty, 2 penalty, 3 penalties. So hopefully that was just an anomaly. But the Kings only got 3 power plays in that game, and they went to the box 7 times.
Well, some of it, I do feel like it was a couple of them were borderline penalties, and a couple of them were like, you know, that side eye, like, okay, I've let other crap go. Now I'm going to call you for this. That's like that type of penalty. Mm-hmm. But it's just like, the discipline factor definitely needs to step up. Although I think it was most shocking in that game, they gave up 1 power play goal. Only 1.
Yeah. Yeah, they were really solid, and they had to be at the end when they were killing that last penalty. But, I mean, I guess part of it is the back-to-back situation. They did have to play against New Jersey the day before, but I'm looking back through the penalties, and they took 3 stick penalties in the first period, and that's not the point where they should be, you know, forgetting to move their feet. So I'll write it off as a 1 game against a rival where they let their tempers or whatever get the better of them. But just, less of that in the future.
I'll never forget Daryl Sutter calls stick, like those types of penalties. He calls them slow moving violations. And I was like, you know what? That's a good point, Daryl.
Yeah, solid. I haven't been keeping up with the Sutterisms this year. So I gotta dig back through some of the post-game interviews and see if he's brought out anything on that level.
I don't think he has any gems that really stick out so far. But I'm sure he'll whip them out at some point this year. knowing better.
Yeah. Yeah, he was very talkative at today's practice, which is good. He had one he's out for a long time on Braden McNabb, but so he was talking about the Pacific Division, about how the division's been tight and it's probably going to stay tight. It's not going to change week to week. And some reporter referred to it as a healthy middle class and said, yeah, there's nothing wrong with it. Call whatever you want. Call it upper middle class, whatever you want. It's so even. So that's the closest we get to a Daryl Sutter answer in that one.
Oh, Sutterisms. What would we do without them?
I don't know. I don't remember a single thing that Terry Murray said in his tenure. So I'm glad it gives us an alternate source of entertainment.
Yeah, you know what? That's a really good point, especially in the land of entertainment. Not that, you know, the coach has to entertain us with his wise words or whatever, but I just think, you know, being his personality what it is, I almost want to say it's helping hockey grow in L.A., which is kind of silly.
Yeah, and I think there was someone posted an article about the various L.A. social media accounts and sports and how the Kings, you know, specifically tried 5 years ago to be a little more edgy in that regard. And there are a lot more billboards down here, and they've now got a monument and all this 50th anniversary stuff. So they're definitely making the effort, which is kind of nice. And they're also marketing different players, which I like. Like, we're seeing Martinez on billboards now. We're seeing Jeff Carter and Muzzin and everybody. And speaking of Carter and Martinez, how good have they been this year?
Oh, my God. Like, they're so hot. And, yes, they're also scoring a lot, which is another dirty joke, which is the best part because they are so – well, not to you, but for most of us ladies, or at least the straight ones, most of us find them very pretty men to look at. But as far as their, like, on-ice play, they're both just doing really well. Carter is –
Mm-hmm.
Carter's reminiscent of 2014 when they first started putting that 70 point together. It's like, okay,
yeah.
You want me to score? I'll go score.
Yeah, and it was huge when Kopitar was out too, because at the beginning of the season, I don't think Carter or – I mean, Kopitar was his usual pickup points here and there, but Carter was pretty quiet. I think through the first – let's see, through the first 10 games, he had 5 points. He had had one in six games before November started. And then, since then, he's got 5, 7, 11, 13 points this month. So, it's been, we had the three shutouts. And as soon as that ended and Kopitar got hurt, Carter decided, okay, maybe this needs to be my team.
Well, you know, it's interesting, in the last 3 years, since 2014, in the last three seasons, one of Toffoli, Carter, or Pearson has started off the season really hot. And I don't know if you remember in November 2013, when Toffoli and Pearson joined the team permanently, basically. Carter got hurt, but Carter was actually really hot when he got hurt. Like, he was playing really good hockey. He was scoring a lot, and then he broke a bone in his foot blocking a shot. I think
November is
kind of Carter's month.
Yeah, and I'll take that. And who was it? I mean, Pearson was scorching a couple years ago before he got hurt. Yeah, Carter's, I mean, the on-ice has been good, too. The possession numbers, especially for Pearson and Toffoli and Carter, they've all been pretty solid in that regard. But the goals, obviously, are where you really need Jeff Carter when the rest of the team is struggling. And I haven't seen the shot numbers necessarily. I don't know if he's been taking the brunt of that as well. I can look it up. But he's definitely managed to find the net a lot more often. And it looks like he and Toffoli are kind of neck and neck for the shot lead, but they're both taking over three shots a game, which is good. You want to see both of them firing away.
Yeah, and I at some point I'll probably, like, go on a long-winded rant about this, but I promise the goals are coming for Toffoli. His on-ice shooting percentage in all situations is 7.9%, or at least it was going into the Chicago game, which for Toffoli is a little low. So
yeah.
And then that does include his power play numbers, because the NHL hates us and they do not like anything 5-on-5. But Toffoli's regular 5-on-5 shooting percentage is usually around 12 to 15%. So it wouldn't be surprised if he starts heating up. Although, if you recall last year, even though he scored 30 goals, there was a point where he went, like, I think it was four whole weeks without a goal, or at least a 5-on-5 goal, and Daryl Sutter started complaining that he's not scoring and that he's not getting to the net enough. And it's like, part of it is odds, yes, but I mean, it's just like...
Yeah.
But it's just Daryl Sutter being Daryl Sutter.
Well, sure, yeah, and I mean, everybody is, I guess, kind of going to go through that. Toffoli, actually, his longest streak without a goal this year is only 5 games, so it's just that it's not that he's been ice cold for weeks on end, it's just that he hasn't really gotten hot yet. And hopefully when Carter does fall off just a little bit, Toffoli's there to pick up the slack, but he's still getting the ice time. He's still getting shots on net. Like he's got multiple shots in every game except for one this year. So it's not like he's becoming invisible. And as long as he's playing with Jeff Carter, he's not going to be invisible at all. So
yeah, there was one game. I forgot who it was against. I think it was against the Jets the Islanders. It was one of the games where Jeff Carter got the first star of the game, and I was, like, silently seething, even though Toffoli hadn't gotten a game, like, Toffoli hadn't scored. Toffoli had by far the best numbers on the team. Like, he allowed zero shots, or he was, like, 100% in Corsi or something. There was no scoring attempts when he was on the ice. It was something ridiculous, and he had, like, 8 scoring chances by himself. I was like, what happened to this kid?
Yeah, more of that, please.
Yeah, and Alex Martinez, like, being, I wonder about Martinez. Is he unsustainable? Some say yes, some say no, but I can't decide.
Yeah, I think, The scoring, and I mentioned in my article today, hint, hint, listeners, go read that later, but that he's scoring more or at a higher rate than any defenseman has for the Kings since Doughty did the first time he was nominated for Norris. And it's not, I mean, he's shooting 10%, which is, you know, high for a defenseman, of course, but he's getting a lot of shots to begin with, a lot more than he has at any other point in his career. And the majority of the scoring chances are coming when he's out there. He hasn't just gotten a bunch of secondary assists necessarily. It's like, I think he'll cool off, but it would be really, really difficult for him not to set a career high in points this year. And if they keep putting out there in 3-on-3, there's no doubt that he's going to get there.
Yeah, you know what, I agree. I mean, he's getting the shots. He's really stepped up into that role, being the $4 million man. You know, I think he's done a really good job in the role that he's been given. And like you said, he's getting shots on goal, and that's the important thing. Will he continue to shoot 10%? Maybe. Yeah. I mean, I think even guys like Subban and Carlson, they're the only guys who have double digits in shooting percentage. So they're, you know, they're kind of rare.
Yeah,
but
yeah, definitely.
We'll see. Hopefully Kevin Gravel, like, or forward, somebody starts heating up besides Alex Martinez.
Yeah, and I think if you want someone to carry the offensive load, it's got to be, you know, your Muzzin or Doughty or Martinez. They've all actually been scoring this year. I think Muzzin, well, let's see, Muzzin only has 6 points, but Doughty has 11, Martinez has 14, and neither of them, like, Doughty and Martinez aren't getting all their points in the power play either. They're actually scoring at even strength, which last year I don't think anybody was doing. Like, I think Rob Scuderi had a higher even strength scoring rate than most of the Kings defensemen, just because he picked up a few random assists, and that was enough to put him ahead of guys who hadn't really done much all year. So if they keep... Yeah, right? I had to check that stat a few times when I was doing a couple of the reviews at the end of the season. But Martinez is actually, he's chipping in normal situations, which the Kings really needed when they were missing Kopitar and they were missing Gabrick.
Yeah. Now, you know what's interesting about Doughty, since you mentioned that he's still scoring at, like, his regular pace. So his play pace is really good, but I saw Jesse Cohen of All the Kings Men, he tweeted, mm-hmm. I think it was like a week or so ago that, I think it was Jesse, but somebody tweeted that, you know, Doughty's goal scoring pace is actually low, even though his point pace is doing fine. It's a really interesting situation for Doughty, because he's like that all-around guy that the Kings rely on.
Right. And he's got, I guess, he's got 3 goals this season, which isn't, you know, off the face of the earth, but it's, I think last year, I think the Kings had Doughty and Martinez in double digits on goals, and I think Muzzin had 8 or something like that. Yeah, Muzzin had 8, Doughty had 14, Martinez had 10. So they're not really drastically different if you look at either Doughty or Muzzin in terms of goals, but I think I'm trying to remember what Jesse said about that, because I don't. I just remember that there were questions about whether Doughty was scoring enough, and like you said, this isn't really abnormal for him. He's scoring more outside of the power play than he did last year. It's just that he hasn't, you know, put the team on his back when it comes to scoring, because Martinez has been doing that instead.
I think they can live with Martinez scoring everything, scoring everything right now. Although, yeah. You know, nobody's ever going to be completely happy, because all the detractors are going to always come back to, like, salary. Also, Al Martinez is making this much money. Dowie's getting paid $7 million. Like, why aren't they scoring? Like,
yeah.
You know what? The Kings are scoring. Have you not watched the team in the last, I don't know, decade?
Yeah, and we're gonna get that full on for Kopitar for the next 9.5 years, or 7.5 years, or whatever it is. He's making $10 million, because that's he's got 9 points in 17 games right now, and if he is doing that over a longer period of time and he doesn't get hurt, then all you will hear about is that he's not doing enough. I've already seen people saying he shouldn't be captain anymore, which to me is just enough.
Yeah, I don't know if you follow Dennis Bernstein on Twitter. I think he's, like, not so secretly, like, half of a Twitter troll at times. It's kind of great, because he'll troll every single fan base if people give him the ammo. But he's just, like, he answers the questions honestly, and people have asked him, like, hey, can we trade Kopitar? He's like, who do you want to replace him with? Okay, you want to bring up Kempe, you want to bring up Mersch, fantastic. They're not NHL ready. Well, Mersch is probably the closest to NHL ready. Kempe is not even close to NHL ready. But it's like, okay, great. Now what are you going to do? Kopitar, I think, is his career average is about 0.76 points per game, so which is right around the same as Jonathan Toews, you know, Captain Canada, Captain Perfect.
Sure.
That will never not be better for me. But
yeah,
Yeah, so his career average is 0.76 points per game, which he's slightly off his career average right now, which is nothing to be concerned about, because he's half a point a game per player.
But I mean, he's still getting the assists. It's just his shots aren't going in, yeah.
Yeah, it's funny to me because, and you pointed this out, I think, a couple years back about this Kopitar quote, about, you know, efficiency and using his energy efficiently.
Right,
he
right.
May not go,
yeah, Quick's quote about him.
Oh, was that Quick's quote about him?
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So some people were going, oh, you know, Kopitar struggled in the game against the Blackhawks. First of all, it was the second game back from injury, and that usually is kind of a letdown game for most players. Coming back from injury, because, you know, they have, like, an adrenaline surge or whatever in their first game back. They're out to prove something. And then by the second game, they're trying to get back into their regular routine. That's normal. That's fine. But people were complaining that Kopitar was bad. He was invisible against the Blackhawks. But, you know, you got to go know with Kopitar, it's always the little things that he does that don't necessarily always show up on the stat sheet. It's just you watch Kopitar and you're going, wait, what happened? And that's what the opposition
right,
is doing.
Yeah, and he played 22 minutes. He had a, let's see, 21 shot attempts for 10 against while he was on the ice. I think he was, if I remember right, he was pretty much hard matched against the line and Kane, Panarin, Anisimov, and basically shut them down for large parts of the game. So, I mean, if you want more than that from Kopitar, then you're going to be disappointed. But that's enough for me, at least for that game.
Yeah. Now, speaking of centers who aren't necessarily scoring, let's talk about Nick Down for a second. I had my doubts, but I was a serious doubter, no pun intended, about Nick Down. Coming into the NHL, I thought, well, because most people wanted to see him on the second line. I still have my reservations about him being on the second line, the quote-unquote second line, you know, with Cipollone and Pearson as opposed to Jeff Carter. But, I mean, everything Nick Dow does is just, I don't know, it's fantastic.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting because so far, he's made enough of the skill plays every single game that people are still, you know, talking about how well he's playing. And he's getting backed up by scoring chance numbers, and he's getting backed up by just the eye test. But he's also he and Brown especially have had some bad luck with goals. I think Brown is a -8 right now, which doesn't reflect on the way Dustin Brown has played this season, but obviously is going to get people worked up. So I'm hoping that Dowd doesn't go into any more of a slump where the points don't come and there are some shots that find their way in while he's on the ice and suddenly people are calling for his head, because he has looked really good for a lot of the season.
Fans never overreact. Eric, what are you talking about?
I don't know. I must have been mistaken. And Go ahead.
I was just saying, you know, I agree. Like, they have had some bad luck. They haven't always been, like, fantastic every game. They struggled against Chicago's third line, which I think has Andrew Shaw or something.
Oh, not anymore. I don't remember whose line that is now.
I forgot.
Yeah, he fought Corey Perry today. It was a disaster.
That's beautiful. I love it. So whoever Chicago's new third line is, they really struggled in that game. So, you know, it's not like Nick Dowd is perfect, and but it's interesting that he seems to be almost a catalyst to a revival of Justin Brown's career, and Taniguchi's career, because the Dowd-Brown line, is almost like it's that nice transition that you want to see from the yeah. second to the third line, in that, you know, they're not as necessarily skilled as the early Carter Pearson line, but they're still a pretty good line, and they still generate quite a few chances.
Yeah, and I think maybe I'm hoping this is sort of their bad luck period now, because Dowd has, well, I don't know what he's been up to the last few games, but the scoring has dropped off a little bit. I think he's gone three games without a point. So his ice time's gone down a little bit. He's played 12 to 13 minutes each of the last six games after he'd gotten a lot of time earlier in November. So it's I don't think the shine's gone off him. I think that he's going to keep his spot, even as now all the forwards are back. But I think he's made enough of those simple plays, and he's fit in seamlessly enough that he's got a spot. Now we're talking about whether to protect him in the expansion draft, which is a pretty good leap for him, considering that he got scratched the first game of the season.
Yeah, the first three games.
That's right. Yeah. And I think what do you think about that? I think it was Sheng that wrote about it over at Hockey Buzz about whether you, because going into the season it was like a no-brainer, the Kings will want to protect four defensemen because none of the other guys they have were beyond that Kopitar, Carter, Toffoli, Pearson set. None of them are going to be pivotal enough to protect, but Now that McNabb's been out of the lineup for a while and the Kings are still winning, I think people are trying to figure out whether they want to grab onto three more forwards at the expense of losing McNabb. Do you have an opinion on that?
Yeah. It's interesting. When we first started talking about the expansion draft more than a year ago, my opinion was protect as many guys as possible, but now I'm kind of jumping back on the – I'm reversing course. I'm agreeing with those people who say protect four defensemen because there's probably not going to be a whole glut of good defensemen available. But I would risk losing Nick Schorr. I would risk losing Nick Darrett. Of all the other forwards that are available, I don't honestly think that Vegas is going to seriously consider Nick Schorr or Nick Dowd, two Knicks. I've always been saying risk Nick Schorr personally.
Yeah, I think that's a fair point, and I totally understand, and I think I agree with you on protecting Braden McNabb, because McNabb, he's cheap. He's stood up really well to all these minutes that he got asked to play at the beginning of the season. Now, like, Derek Forbert, I think he's been passable. He has looked a lot better in the last few games than he did the first few games. And he's fit in reasonably well, but he's also not, like, his possession numbers are pretty low. He's definitely not up to where McNabb is at this point. And if you want to ride Forbert as your number four defenseman, then then you can try it. But I'd rather leave McNabb safe, and from that point, I can figure out what to do with the rest of the forward depth.
Yeah, and the thing is also why I want to protect McNabb is because option-wise, that leaves you with Matt Green. Or you can re-sign Tom Gilbert, should Tom Gilbert have, like, a really good year. But Tom Gilbert's not even having, like, a Willie Mitchell-esque effect on the roster right now.
Yeah.
But granted, our defense is not quite as young as when they signed Willie Mitchell. Because if you remember, when they first got Willie Mitchell, that was, I think, 2 years after they grabbed Dowdy. So Dowdy was still 20 years old. when they brought in Willie Mitchell. And we all know what a hockey genius Willie Mitchell is.
Right. Yeah, I think I don't know. I think it's been interesting to watch Gravel and Forbert this year. Because I don't think anybody's really disgruntled with them. I think especially given that for both of them it's their first full season with a really heavy workload, that they're doing what can be expected of them. But I think the once you get into February or March, if they're playing like they are now, I do wonder whether Gilbert gets the nod ahead of them, especially once McNabb is back. I think there's kind of a tendency to rely on the veteran in that situation. And I don't think either of them have shown enough where they're like, you can't remove him from the lineup, especially Gravel. So it'll be interesting. hopefully the Kings keep winning, because then you don't have to worry about any of that stuff. So it looks like we've got about 10 minutes left. Unfortunately, I think Robin dropped off the call. We might be bringing it to a slightly early end, but we've talked about pretty much everything we wanted to talk about. With Budai and Dowd and Carter and Martinez. So at this point, I think we will call it just as a slight preview as what's coming up. The Sharks are in town tomorrow. The Coyotes are welcoming the Kings the day after. And then we move into December, and we're going to get a 9-game road trip. The exciting thing, at least for the blog, is that we have added not one, not two, not three, but 6 new writers to the site. And we've been having them sort of phase in on various features. You've seen them on recaps or game previews and the occasional feature piece. So now that Thanksgiving is over, we've got the podcast running again, and we're going to have the new writers definitely taking a larger role. So stick with the blog. They're going to be introduced in full on Monday, but you should see something from every one of them between now and Monday. So we're looking forward to doing this JewelCast thing a little more often. And thanks again to Robin for joining us. And for the rest of you, keep reading and follow along Twitter tomorrow when we get to play the Sharks again. So thanks, everyone, for listening, and we'll talk to you soon.